Today's show is presented by Prize Picks. Go to prizepicks.com and use code PACKADAY for a $100 deposit match.
Minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What is up, everybody? Happy Wednesday. Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. It is Wednesday. You know what that means. It is Paul Breddle Day. It is great to be joined by you once again, Paul. Hope all is going well. Of course, you can find him on Twitter at Paul_Breddle. You can find him on ESPN Lacrosse and pretty much anywhere else you find amazing Packers takes. Paul, how the heck are you doing, bud?
I'm excellent, Andy. Always happy to be back talking Packers football with you.
Yeah, it's a good week to be talking Packers. Mm-hmm. Obviously, A, they're coming off a win. B, it was an interesting win with some ups and downs. So there's always that. There were some different things that Green Bay did this past week. So that is interesting as well. And then always fun news around the league. We've got a Robert Saleh firing as well to discuss. So we will get into all of that today. I will let you take the floor first, though. And what would you like to talk about? What was your kind of key takeaway from this game?
Yeah, I think obviously we saw the plays of Xavier McKinney, the big plays from the offense, but as it's kind of been the theme as we kick off our conversations each week, kind of taking a step back, a 30,000 foot view of the performance, the big takeaway for me, the overarching one, was they found a way to win. They found a way to win when things obviously weren't going well. And it's a Rams team that was 1-3, I think 1-4 now. After that game, they're dealing with injuries. They've had their own struggles. You know, ideally, that's a game where you want to see the Packers go in, look crisp, jump out to a quick lead, and then maintain that throughout the game. And unfortunately, it's not how things went. But again, they found a way to win. And with all the ups and downs that took place in the game, in those key moments, you know, your defense comes up with big takeaways, and your offense goes down and puts up two touchdowns off of those takeaways. Your defense comes up, finds a way to get a stop at the end of the game. As bumpy as it was in those big moments, they found a way to come through. And I know this is a team, obviously, with Super Bowl aspirations. We saw the growth, the progress, how good they looked at the end of last season. But I think it's also important to keep in mind this is still the youngest team in football. This is still a team that is very much learning. And I remember when Aaron Rodgers was here, I feel like he said this every year, that even with, you know, those more veteran-heavy Packers teams, every year is a new year and you have to learn how to win. You have to learn how to win with that team. And so I think the Packers going out there, not playing anywhere near what their best football was for four quarters, still finding a way to win, a way to come through in those big moments. Again, glass half full. I think that that's very much a positive from this game.
This is going to be, or at least resonate with like 25, maybe percent of the listeners that we have on this show today. But this game felt like a Shawn Michaels match where like Shawn Michaels just got beat up for the entirety of the match. But then a sweet chin music at the end was good enough to get him the win. It was that one, you know, big play in this case is maybe a couple of sweet chin musics from Green Bay where he's able to get a, you know, a couple super kicks in with a Xavier McKinney pick, a Xavier McKinney fumble recovery. And then of course, big plays, Tucker Kraft, Jaden Reed, just a few of those big strikes that were good enough to get you the victory in a game that I don't know that Green Bay was getting beat up throughout the entirety of it, but just certainly could not get in any sort of rhythm or offense the way that you would sort of expect them to going into this game. But you still found a way to get the 1-2-3 at the end and you will take the victory and there's no apologizing for it. So I'm with you. This is one that they found a way to win. There is a skill in that. I truly believe that there's no, they're the most fraudulent 13. I don't care. Find ways to win. And that gets you in the dance. And when you get in the dance, then you've got that puncher's chance and figure out a way. How can we navigate this to maybe get to a Super Bowl or beyond? So that's what I'm concerned about. In other sports, I kind of agree. Like when you've got 162 game sample size in baseball, like, all right, some of that stuff is going to be a little bit more telling from time to time, even in basketball, 82 game season, like, but in a 17 game season where chaos reigns supreme and you never quite know what you're going to get. And then in a single elimination football tournament where it's not, again, a 7-game series or a 5-game, you have one chance and a couple bad bounces one way or the other can decide your fate in a playoff game. I don't care about any of that other stuff. Just find a way to win. The Al Davis just win, baby. I'm all in on it. And I think we saw that in this game.
Yeah, we all know game of football, things are most often not going to go completely smoothly. There's going to be ugly games. There's going to be ways where things aren't going well for whatever the reasons are. And you just have to find a way. And again, in those critical moments throughout the game, forcing the turnovers, turning the turnovers into points, the stops at the end. The Packers found a way to do that. And again, for a young team, I think that's a really, really important part of this, again, this journey that is, you know, what hopefully becomes a trip to the playoffs and on from there. This is an important part of that process, being able to win when you don't have your best.
Let's talk about those big plays, because I know you wrote about specifically, I know you kind of just talked about it now too, but these big plays for Green Bay are really what are generating so many of the opportunities, so many of the points, so many of the turnovers. It does feel to some extent like they are living and dying at times by the big play ability. Thankfully, more often than not, living by it, not dying by it. But how do you see this sort of being able to be navigated moving forward? Because we know sometimes explosive plays and especially turnovers can come in bunches, or they can be fickle at best, and you don't know that you can always depend on them. And sometimes it takes a little bit more of a consistent offense and defensive approach. To your point from earlier, they're finding ways to win, so it's not the biggest deal in the world. But how do you sort of balance that out right now as you look at these big plays from Green Bay?
Big plays are great. I mean, Matt LaFleur says big plays lead to points. Packers, I think, are the best in football in terms of just quantity of generating them. And I mean, that number, like you said, they can come in bunches, they can come and go, and there's, it might be quiet stretches, but I mean, that part of this team is real. I mean, we see the run game, we see the pass game, like the Packers' ability to do that is real. And it's going to, you know, we expect it to continue to throughout the season. The bigger issue, however, is that that's their main source of moving the ball, main source of offense. And as great as that ability is, that cannot be your only way of moving the football. It leads to a very boom or bust approach, which is what we've seen particularly the last 2 weeks from the offense. And in that article that I wrote, I think a lot of it just goes back to the first down woes. And obviously it's a different extent than last season. There wasn't that big playability. This was a team still that hadn't figured it out yet at this time a year ago. Right. But going back to 2023, felt like every week in the press conferences with Matt LaFleur is all went back to the first down issues. You know, you're facing and a lot of it's self-inflicted. It's an off-target throw from Love. It's a penalty. It's a drop pass. You know, maybe only pick up a yard or two in the run game. But when you're in second and eight, third and long, and living there consistently, it's just a brutal place to live, regardless of the talent that you have around you and on offense. And as Matt LaFleur is a play caller, the pass rush, they have the advantage. They're just pinning their ears back. They know you're passing the ball. They're coming to get you. From a coverage standpoint, the secondary has the advantage. There's only so many routes you can run when you're facing a third and 10 situation to get you beyond the sticks. The defense has the advantage. And when you're not able to move the ball on first down, it's just a negative trickle down effect to the rest of the game. I mean, we saw it, you know, in these last 2 weeks with very, very short possessions for the offense. I went down in the article and wrote it down. Six of the Packers' 10 possessions against the Rams were three plays or less. 10 of their possessions against the Vikings were five plays or less. Now, it doesn't mean those were all punts. There were turnovers in there. There were touchdowns in there. But nonetheless, we're not seeing extended drives. And beyond, like we just talked about, giving the defense the advantage, the trickle-down effect is now your defense is on the field longer. It's wearing them down over the course of the game because there's a discrepancy in time of possession, number of plays ran. Your offense has fewer opportunities. So now you have to be super, super efficient when you do have the ball in order to put up points. So Packers have to find a way on those early downs to put themselves in advantageous situations. And I think if they can do that, we're also going to see the positive trickle effect of that, which is I think we're going to see more steady play from Jordan Love. There's not going to be that same boom or bust from this offense. And like I said at the beginning, they're their own worst enemy to a degree right now. It's a lot of self-inflicted errors, which to a degree, obviously the defense is putting them in those positions to a degree, but it's a lot of things that the Packers have to clean up. And if they can do that, if they can start living like they did in the second half of the season and second and fours, third and ones, I think we'll really see this group take off.
I hate to sound like a broken record, and I've talked about this a lot over the course of the week, but I'm even going back to last week a bit. Outside of maybe the first half against the Colts, it's just never felt like this team has really been in rhythm at any point in time, never really playing a brand of complementary football that really was, you know, firing in all phases. And to your point, a lot of that has been self-inflicted wounds and mistakes and penalties and drops and interceptions, etc. And it just feels like they can't kind of get out of their own way. And it does harken back a little bit to earlier in last year where you would see these guys, like they'd be on top of each other on routes or again, making these mistakes that would cause it so that they couldn't get in that rhythm. And now the good news is that Green Bay found a way to navigate that last year to get to a point where they could find that rhythm and they could get all on the same page and they could play complementary football. And it looked awesome. The bad news is we were kind of hoping that knowing what they learned by the end of last year, that they were going to be able to carry that over into the beginning of this year. And we haven't seen that so far. So again, I think there are some baked in excuses, if nothing else, from the 2 weeks of backup quarterback, the first week being wonky, Minnesota's defense does you no favors. Like, there are some things that allowed you to not get in that rhythm early in the year, especially on the offensive side of the ball. But now is the time. You picked up this win against the Rams to get back on that and to start getting things going in the right direction against the Cardinals. Stop beating yourself. Stop having the pre-snap penalties and the drops and things like that. If they do that, I mean, we are clearly seeing, to your point, these big plays are not a fluke. Like, we are seeing the explosiveness of this offense. We know that this offense in the past has been able to put together drives, and we like that should be a staple of this offense. We're seeing big time turnovers from this defense. Like, if they all of a sudden come together and like do that, it is going to be scary what they look like. They just got to find a way to do it and not, again, beat themselves on those particular plays and games.
Yeah. And again, it's, you know, there's some overlap in the long down and distances to last year, but this year, unlike last, they've shown that they can overcome it. And it definitely feels, to your point, like it's just a matter of time. Like, yeah, you trust that they're going to get these bumps ironed out. And then, like you said, when they can be in those advantageous down and distances and pair the passing game with the running game, when they can put together these extended drives of 8, 10, 12 plays, whatever it is, I mean, that's when things are really going to get rolling for this unit.
All right. I don't know even how to phrase this, because I know it's been talked about already, but I you wrote about it, so this is I wanted to ask you about it. Xavier McKinney, like, just out of this world, incredible, amazing, astounding, add whatever adjective that you want into the conversation. But to not only have the 5 picks in 5 games, but obviously won every single game, to not only get the fumble recovery, to have the huge pass breakup early in this game, almost come up with another interception later in the game, firm tackling, sideline to sideline, post safety, slot, box safety, whatever you want to do with them, you can do with them. Mentoring the young safeties like Javon Bullard and Evan Williams in the back end, which is helping the kickstart their career, in my opinion. Like, it's just, it's all there. It is all fun to watch. And again, I don't even know what to say at this point. It is so freaking fun to see what he is doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you said, there's not too much more that I can really expound on that everyone hasn't seen or hasn't been talked about, haven't heard about. But in the article, what I thought was that I wrote, that I thought was a slightly different angle on it, was last week, Jeff Hafley and then the defensive backs coach, Ryan Downard, who spends most of his time working with the safeties, met with us and was obviously asked about Xavier McKinney, and the instinct part of his game is what both of them had described. And obviously that puts him in a position to make those plays on the football that he is. And that starts, one, with McKinney's preparation. Downard said that McKinney is texting him constantly at the start of the week. Hey, where's the quarterback film? Where's the quarterback film? He wants to get his eyes on it and he wants to dive into it immediately. And obviously the coaches weren't going to go into specifics about what that was, but Hafley discussed as much as he could, obviously, the what McKinney's looking for in that his eyeing of the quarterback, whether it's the quarterback's footwork, the hips, whatever it might be. There's just these little tells that McKinney, from his film work, he's very diligent on, picks up, and it's those split second. Hafley talked about how he's, you know, rewatching the tape in super, super slow mo. And while both the quarterback's hands are still on the ball, as he's dropping back, he gets to the top of his drop, McKinney is already breaking because there's something, whether it's in the routes, again, footwork, hips, whatever it might be, that he's studied, that he's seen, that he says, all right, here's where the ball's going. And it gives him that ability to break on it, to be in a position to cover that insane amount of ground that he does when he's back there. So I thought that those two, when Hafley and Downer were speaking about that part specifically, because that's the part that, you know, we don't really see, you know, that's the behind the scenes. That's, you know, the stuff in super, super slow-mo that the coaches and film guys like yourself are picking up on. But, you know, I thought that was just terrific insight into what puts him in the position to make the plays that he is. And I think one other less discussed, talked about aspect of McKinney is, like, quarterbacks aren't targeting him. Like, I think he said after the game that's Stafford, that was the most a quarterback has ever looked off of him during his time. And there was a stat I tweeted out from Pro Football Focus that McKinney was allowing a reception once every 90 snaps. So about once every 6 quarters of football, just an insane amount. And point of all that being, he's taken away a large, large portion of the field. Like, there's a large portion of the field that quarterbacks are not going. They do not want to go with the ball. And so obviously for the rest of the defenders, that shrinks the areas that you have to worry about, that you're responsible for. And again, that's that force multiplier aspect of making everyone around him better.
Hey, everyone. I cannot believe that we are already on to week six in the NFL. Thankfully, week five went Green Bay's way. But unfortunately, the division stayed strong and Minnesota and Chicago both picked up wins while Detroit had their bye. So needless to say, Green Bay needs to keep winning. But guess what? We all need to keep winning with Prize Picks. Now, Prize Picks is the best place to get real money sports action, and you can join over 10 million users who are already signed up. And when you sign up, you get $50 instantly when you play $5. You don't even need to win to receive the bonus. It's guaranteed. So make your picks in less than 60 seconds and turn your sports opinions into real money all season long on Prize Picks. This week, I'm going with Josh Jacobs to tear it up against Arizona, and I'm also going to go with Lamar Jackson to have a monster performance against Washington. Whoever you choose, just remember, you can download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 instantly when you play $5. That's code PACKADAY on Prize Picks to get $50 instantly when you play $5. Prize Picks, run your game.
It's so funny you bring up the instincts and his ability to jump a ball. There's a play in this. Obviously, he had the two, you know, the one interception and then two other plays on the ball, one that he could have potentially come up with. But there's another play where it goes far left sideline. I think it was maybe Nixon in coverage. I forget who it was. But he's playing the post safety and he's going this way. And you can tell every instinct in his body is to go over, like to scream over there and go make the play. And you can tell he understands that he's got deep safety, like responsibility. So like he stays back. If he would have trusted his instinct, he may have ended up with another interception. Cause you could just tell he's like, I got to do my job. But you could just tell he was like wanting to like scream over there. He knew where the ball was going to go. And it's just one of those things where like, and quite frankly, I appreciate that about him because, you know, if he's wrong and all of a sudden they come back the other way, now there's a huge vacated gap in the defense, but like you can just tell the level at which he is playing at and the way that his instincts are telling him, and not just instincts, but again, the tape study is telling him where to go. And I'm so glad you brought up the film thing too, because when he said it, or I saw the initial quote of like, when can I get the film? I'm like, Xavier, I have the film. I'm like, I can see the all 22 at this point. What do you mean you don't know how to get the film? I'm like, I have it at this point. But obviously this is not just all 22 film. This is a very specific cut up of, you know, what the quarterbacks are doing. And, you know, like you said, maybe it's the ultra slow-mo, or maybe it's again, a key in on exactly just the quarterback's form and, you know, whatever they're doing. There's clearly a different sort of cut up that they are making specifically for him so he can get those tells, which is a very cool thing. And we have heard Javon Bullard and Evan Williams talk about how he would review film with those rookies before they would even meet with their position coaches to get them ready to meet with the position coaches. He is just an absolute freaking stud and a joy to have on this team. And I will say it once again, thank you freaking New York Giants, because we owe you one in an insane way. So yeah, we really appreciate it. We gave you Greg Joseph. So I guess it evens out in the end.
Yeah, Eric Stokes had a great quote where it's like what McKinney's doing is like Madden. This is like Madden numbers that he's putting up when you know playing at home.
Yeah. Speaking of which, by the way, we need to up that Madden rating because we're going to look at it right now. We've got Xavier McKinney, and he got an increase this past week. Not that it ultimately matters, by the way, but he went up from an 86 to an 88 with an only 88 speed back in that secondary. No superstar, ability on there. Madden, we've got to do a much better job. We got to get that above a 90. We need some superstar abilities. Xavier McKinney is a superstar, and he needs to be recognized as such in the Madden community. All right, let's talk about the other huge topic over the course of the last week or so. And that is Romeo Doubs. It's been sort of discussed ad nauseum, and we don't know the full details. We know he was not at practice last week. We know Matt didn't tell us a bunch on Monday about exactly what happened in that specific scenario. He was not going to go into details. He is expected to be back at practice on Wednesday. Hopefully that comes to fruition. Two things that I'm curious from your point of view. A, what has been your impression of Romeo Doubs in the locker room? And did this catch you by surprise? And B, what do you think? And I know this is an impossible question to answer, but what do you think the reintegration is for Romeo within this offense and going into this weekend?
Yeah, I was completely caught off guard. I mean, the interactions that we've had with Romeo this season have been as they've been in the past. You know, he's a bit more of a soft-spoken individual, but he's always super, super good with, or kind with his time, kind to us when we were in there. So there was nothing that I would can point to and say, oh, you know, this would have, we saw something coming, because that just wasn't the case whatsoever. And LaFleur even said that this is very much an isolated incident of what took place. And as far as how he gets worked back into the offense, I mean, I think LaFleur gave us a little bit of the blueprint behind it. And it's, you know, it's sounds like it's going to be kind of a, what does the game plan call for? Right. You know, LaFleur said that it ultimately it's his job and the coaches to put together the game plan that's going to help the team win. And I think the broader message to not just Dobbs, but the team in general is obviously everyone has their own individual goals that they want to accomplish. But LaFleur said a lot of times if we're checking the team, you know, checking the team boxes, winning games, winning the division, getting to playoffs, a lot of times those individual goals that a lot of players have, they're going to be able to meet those along the way as well. So I think that was kind of one of the, you know, my big takeaways from this in terms of your second question there and how they're going to approach it. I think it's going to be, for the most part, you know, status quo. I'm sure there was talk about making sure that the lines of communication between Dobbs and the coaching staff remain very, very open. So if feelings in the future are starting to bottle up or fester a little bit, he knows he can go talk to, you know, Jason Vrabel or LaFleur, whoever it might be in those situations. But again, like LaFleur said on Monday, it goes back to the team component of it and what's best for the team, what's best for the team in those situations. And I just want to say as well, I mean, obviously we know this, but getting Dobbs back is huge. You know, we've seen Jaden Reed emerge as, you know, the guy at receiver in this offense, but this is very much still a unit that's strength in numbers. You know, if the Packers can get all six of those guys firing on all cylinders from a game plan standpoint, from how they can stress defenses, there's just so much that they can do. And Dobbs is a big part of that. You know, I think I saw he had the third most targets on the team before this last game. And I wrote about him over the summer and I was looking back at last season. He was a big target for Jordan Love in some really, really key moments. I don't remember them all off the top of my head, but there was a late touchdown against the Chargers last year. There was a fourth down conversion against the Chiefs that helped the Packers put the game away. I think he had a late reception in the Carolina game that helped them get into field goal range for Anders Carlson. Obviously, we know his performance against the Dallas Cowboys, but there was a number of plays last year, like a key third down, key fourth down, red zone opportunity. I think he led the team in red zone targets where Dobbs was that guy. So again, very, very important that he's back on this, back with the team, because he does play a very important role.
And what's going to happen too is, you know, as Jaden continues to tear up the league and light it on fire, what's going to happen? Everyone's going to target Jaden. They're going to be like, well, we can't let that guy beat us. And as Tucker Kraft continues to make more and more plays, they're going to be like, well, we can't let Tucker Kraft beat us. And all of a sudden, guys like Romeo Dobbs and Dontavian Wicks, and I think we're already seeing it with Wicks to some extent. He needs to take more advantage of those opportunities, but he's still seeing it. But Christian Watson, those guys are going to get more favorable looks, and then they're going to get more opportunities because even if Jaden Reed is the number one read on something, all right, he's doubled. All right, let me come back to Romeo. Oh, he's got a one-on-one. He won that easy. Awesome. Now we can throw it his way. So I just think like this was always going to be to me the ebb and flow of the season from a weapon standpoint. Is there are going to be months or weeks where there's going to be somebody who is just on fire. And then again, teams might adjust to how they defend Green Bay and they might take away Reed. And now we might see a month of Wicks. We might see a month of Dobbs. We might see at some point a month of Watson, or I think it could really change week to week, game by game, month by month, et cetera. It's been awesome for Reed so far, but it wouldn't shock me if teams again start to take him away and Green Bay's got to go elsewhere. And having Romeo in that spot, I think is going to be huge for this offense.
Yep, I agree.
I want to talk to you about two other offensive players really quick before we go to the defensive side of the ball. Luke Musgrave played no snaps this week, in large part to me, just due to the injury. I'm sort of shocked that they made him active. If that was going to be the game plan, the only thing I can think of is if Kraft went down, they wanted to be able to put him in as that receiving option because it was such a huge part of the game plan this week. That would be kind of my guess. And then Jordan Morgan was down this past week. It looks like he's getting closer and closer. My guess is he's back this week or at least in the very near future. How would you reintegrate these two players specifically into this offense when they do get back fully healthy?
I think for Musgrave, we got to look at, all right, what does he do well? What does he bring to the team? It's that field stretching ability. And as he hasn't been asked to do that a lot, or at least not when he's targeted. I went back on Pro Football Focus. His average, and again, this is a small sample size. He has just seven targets on the season, but his average depth of target in weeks two, three, four were -1 yard, 1 yard, 2 yard. Like that's not Luke Musgrave's strength. He's while he's big, he's athletic, he has speed. He's not the yak guy that Tucker Kraft is, where you're going to get him the ball around the line of scrimmage, where he's going to be that safety blanket and turn a 3 yard catch into a 13 yard gain. You wanted him to stretch the field. You want him to go down the seam to get matched up with a slot cornerback where he has a size advantage, or a linebacker where he has a speed advantage. So I think it just goes back to, all right, what does he do really well? We all know it's that field stretching ability. All right, how do we find ways to get him those opportunities in the game? And admittedly, it's not as easily said as it needs to be done. Yeah. Because when you have Musgrave on the field, you know, does that mean that you're taking Tucker Kraft off? What are you losing from a blocking aspect? Obviously, we just talked about all the receivers that they have who can stretch the field and can bring that element. So again, not easily accomplished, but I think that's what you got to ultimately go back to. Totally. As far as Jordan Morgan, my guess is that they're going to throw him right back into the mix at right guard. My impression from the summer during training camp, and we heard Sean Ryan's competing, but to me it never looked like a real competition, because Jordan Morgan, when healthy during training camp, he was at right guard, and he got Sean Ryan at right guard, at center, at left guard, with the first team, with the second team. Like, to me, my perspective, they want Jordan Morgan to be their starting right guard. And so I think that once he's back, once he's healthy, I think they're going to go back to the rotation, get him back into the mix. And then I think until someone truly emerges and consistently says, I'm the guy here, I think they're going to stick with that for the time being. But I think they want to get Morgan involved.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I thought the last 2 weeks prior to this one, the 2 weeks before there, Tennessee and Minnesota, I thought Ryan was fantastic. And we heard Steno as well. Like, he basically said Tennessee was the best game he played. And then he said, nope, now Minnesota is the best game that he played. I thought he was really, really good in both those games, to the point where I'm like, I don't know that you take him out. Like, he was that good in those two games. And then this week he kind of came back to life a little bit and kind of looked a little bit more Sean Ryan-ish, if you will. But I'm still very high on what he has done so far this season on the whole. I think you're right, though. I think it just, as I watched him this week, and I think just maybe giving him a smaller, you know, piece of the pie, I think it can kind of help everyone. And it certainly gives Jordan Morgan those reps as well. But I think you're right. I think it's going to still be a rotation, and it wouldn't shock me if it sort of stayed a rotation for a while, like you said, until maybe one of those guys just starts to tear it up well above the other one. And if so, great. I think you probably end up with an injury faster than you end up with somebody just completely annihilating the other one to the fact that they're not playing anymore. So, we'll see. Hopefully there are no injuries. That'd be great. But I do think they start getting him reps, and I think they recognize how important it is just to get him any sort of reps, just like they've done with Cooper and Evan Williams and Javon Bullard and a lot of these guys, just to get them started ingrained and involved in the game in any way possible.
Yeah, and if Morgan, you know, even if it's just in the rotation standpoint, but obviously you hope that he continues to take steps and maybe becomes that guy that emerges. If that happens, like, your offensive line unit as a whole becomes much, much stronger, because now your sixth guy, Sean Ryan, who has shown, you know, smaller sample size, but that he can play all three interior positions, whereas Morgan's only been the right guard. So if Morgan can emerge at that right guard spot, all of a sudden the depth along the offensive line, specifically the interior, is improved as well, because now you have added flexibility to move Ryan around if needed.
Well said. I want to talk about a couple of those guys on defense really quick. I want to start with Evan Williams. This was basically his debut as like a full-time player, playing basically the full complement of snaps at safety. Your impression of him through his first full-time debut?
I love the clip that you posted, where it was a similar play early in the game and late in the game. You could see the real-time learning experience that was taking place. And we always hear Matt LaFleur saying, I mean, the best teacher is going to be these live reps. And really, really encouraging to see a rookie in game before, you know, I'm sure there was some talk on the sideline, but before, you know, you've had a week to evaluate the film, go out and practice it in game, make that adjustment, get that recognition, and go make that play, obviously in a big time moment as well. I think, to me, that was one of the most encouraging aspects of it, but it was a bigger sample size of what we saw in that first preseason game against, was it Cleveland? It was the first preseason game where he was flying around the field and those in that first quarter when he was out there, he was doing that this entire game. Evan Williams was everywhere in on tackle. So really, really encouraging performance. And just a quick tangent, I love the flexibility and the just the willingness of Jeff Hafley to adjust.
Yeah,
going from the, you know, not great performance defensively in the secondary against Minnesota to just completely switching things up to where, all right, we got Valentine back. We'll use him in. We'll mix him in with Stokes. We're going to put Keyshawn out on the boundary where he got reps during training camp. We're going to bring Bullard down to the slot. Now we can get Williams out there. Like, this is what everyone is clamoring for. This is what you want your coaches to do. You want them to see the film, see the tape, see who the opponent is. And then because the Packers have the versatility, because they have the confidence in so many players in that secondary like they do, take advantage of that. Use it. What is the best combination for this week? So I think that aspect of it should have Packers fans really excited as well.
Yeah, I think so too. For those who don't know the play that I posted on Twitter, there's on the final drive of the game, there's a 3rd and 10 and they motion into trips and the tight end is kind of behind and Williams is one-on-one with the tight end and the tight end does a little outside route and then does a slant on the backside of it. So Williams is kind of going outside and then he has to react to it coming inside and they complete it to the tight end. Williams gets him down. It was a 3rd and 10 on the play. He got about 9.5 yards and then they went for it on 4th and inches. They were able to convert and they lived to see another down. Then later in that same drive on 4th down and the key play at the very end of the game defensively, they motion into trips. The tight end is behind. He does the little, sort of out route fake and then he cuts inside with the slant. And Williams was all over it. He recognized it from previously in the drive, drove on it, broke up the pass. And obviously the Packers were able to get away with the win on that one. So just the fact that he's able to do that in real time on the same drive, nonetheless, is massively impressive. I want to talk about one of those other young players, though, Edgerrin Cooper. I thought this was a nice game from Edgerrin. I thought obviously the sack was huge. But, the one thing I will say, we saw it in the first week where he was lined up in the wrong spot and it ended up in a touchdown run for the Eagles. There was a play late in this one where Bullard and Cooper, there's a bunch of, communication at the line and Bullard's lined up over the tight end and like Bullard and Quay are like communicating that like somebody's supposed to be there. It's supposed to be Edgerrin. So Edgerrin has to come over, get over the tight end. And then Bullard was able to go and try to get over to the corner. And by that time it was too late. Ball is snapped. They're running and out. Bullard's trying to run from the other side of the field. And you've got a wide open completion for Matthew Stafford, who recognized it the full way that they weren't lined up correctly. Take the free money. But those are some of the mistakes that you have to live with rookies on that play. Bullard and Cooper, they didn't get lined up in the right alignment at the right amount of time. It felt like Cooper was probably the one in the wrong and Bullard was kind of the one that was covering for it. Don't know that for sure, but I think those things still need to get cleaned up. But man, on the field, Edgerrin Cooper is looking really good.
Yeah. And again, a lot of that's going to, like you alluded to, it's going to come back to the experience. And Jeff Hafley even talked about that last Thursday. Like, you see the speed, you see the explosiveness, the playmaking ability, but he's got to be out there. He's got to, like Hafley said, something to the effect of it's time to go, as Cooper has been in all 5 games this season, but there's been practices where he's been limited or it just hasn't been out there in full capacity. And this is coming off of, missing the preseason games. And I wrote about Cooper, specifically his blitzing ability, over at ESPN Lacrosse. And there's a good quote in there from him just on, from early on in the season on the challenges of trying to get acclimated on the fly in the regular season when you don't have that time. So that's part of this learning curve that he's going through, because you can answer all the questions in meetings that you can. You can know the playbook inside and out, but there's knowing it, and then there's applying it when everything's moving a million miles an hour. So that's the part of it that, like many young players, he's still working through. But like you said, his playmaking ability is evident as a blitzer. That speed in the run game, cutting off outside runs, the ability to fill gaps really quick. I mean, he just has the ability because of that speed to just potentially erase so many potential issues that could pop up within a defense, because he can just cover so much ground. And played 30 snaps this past game, which is the most, I think, the week prior against Minnesota, he had played 19. So they're giving him more opportunities. He's pretty much taken over that third linebacker role when the Packers are in base. I think Eric Wilson only saw 2 or 3 snaps this week. And then he's getting more opportunities in nickel in for Isaiah McDuffie. So the progression's there. We're seeing the playmaking, and you stay healthy and you just want to see it continue to trend each week, where it goes from McDuffie taking the bulk of those snaps to all of a sudden flips the other way.
Yeah, and I think that's going to come with time. I think we're going to see more and more Cooper. I think we'll see kind of less of probably McDuffie and Eric Wilson, and I think it's probably the right time to start doing so. He's a really fun player. They need him out on the field. I think even more his explosiveness and his playmaking is very, very evident, and the more you can get of that, certainly the better. Just needs to clean up some of those alignment things. All right, two quick ones really fast. One, what, and maybe this isn't as quick as it maybe, you know, should be or whatever, but what is your ideal makeup of this defense? Cause I know a lot of people asking, we kind of just talked about Cooper, who's the ideal slot, the outside corners. Is it Valentine? Is it Stokes? How do you utilize Evan Williams? Like what's your ideal makeup if everyone's healthy on defense?
Man, that's a great question. This is, I think LaFleur said something to the effect, this is kind of a luxury that the Packers have right now because they trust so many guys to go out there and make plays. Like we just talked about, you want Cooper to, again, and this is going to be a bit of a progression. Yeah, this isn't going to just be against the Cardinals Sunday, but you want him to continue to see more snaps, take more of that workload away from McDuffie. I think as Valentine gets further removed from the injury, gets more practices, I really do think that the snap counts between him and Stokes are going to start to shift to where he's out there more than Eric Stokes. It just feels like, one, he went out there, he's played well, but two, it just feels like that's what, kind of what the coaching staff wants, right? Because even after the summer where he was injured, Eric Stokes had performed well throughout training camp. Right when Valentine was healthy, it was, all right, let's get him in there. And Stokes still took the bulk of the snaps, but there's a concerted effort by the coaching staff to get Valentine involved. And so I think eventually I could see it going to where Valentine's taking the majority of the snaps. And I just don't think it's going to go to where Valentine is starting directly across from Jair and Stokes is coming. It's just on the bench. I still think they're going to find ways to work both those guys in, but I think we're trending towards where Valentine's going to take the bulk of those snaps over Stokes. As far as safety, as far as nickel, I think they're going to keep Keyshawn in the slot. I think Javon Bullard, I just think Bullard's skill set, well, he has the ability to play down in the nickel. I think he's just best in that free safety role. And so I think between him and Williams, there's going to be, you know, kind of like what they were doing prior to this week, where there's going to be certain, whether it's a rotation, whether it's in base, it's Evan Williams, and in nickel, it's Javon Bullard, just next to Xavier McKinney. I think there's going to be a mixing and matching in terms of how those two are utilized. So that's kind of how I see things unfolding right now. I don't think there's really any black and white answers where it's like Valentine over Stokes, Cooper over McDuffie. There's going to be this, you know, we saw with the offensive line last year. They're very willing to ride out these rotations to play matchups like we talked about earlier, depending on who the opponent is, how they utilize these guys. But that's kind of how I see things trending right now.
Yeah, a lot of rotations on the defensive line. I think Quay's probably going to remain in that Mike linebacker role. Cooper and McDuffie doing a lot of rotating at that spot. Jair, primary corner, with a lot of rotating at the other spot, with a little bit of Bullard in the slot and then mostly Nixon. And then, you know, McKinney playing all the snaps at safety. And then again, probably a little bit of Bullard and Williams at the other. And to your point, I think it's going to be, and what you kind of mentioned earlier, matchup specific, what teams they're going against, what players are healthy, how they can get their best players on the field. I think that's all going to play a part of it. And I think that's probably the right way to go, other than guys like, again, Jair, Xavier McKinney. You know, you want those guys out there a ton, but other than that, like, keep rotating guys. And if somebody all of a sudden starts tearing it up, all right, give them more playing time. But I think keeping everyone fresh and keeping everyone in there is still good to some extent. But I'm the big one, I would like to see more Valentine than Stokes at this point. I think that is one that needs to kind of go in that direction. Last but not least, really quick thoughts, Robert Saleh out. Obviously they've got the Aaron Rodgers at quarterback from Green Bay. How do you evaluate the coaching change in New York?
I was surprised, and I know offensively things haven't gone how the Jets have wanted, but really just the point that we're at in the season at 2-3, yeah. I think Buffalo is winning that division at 3-2. So, and you're they right. Play Buffalo this week. So a win and you're tied for first place in the division. Again, outside perspective, it just feels premature because as we've seen throughout NFL history, it's not often that these type of decisions are made and things get better.
Yeah, I'm with you. If you would have told me before the season that Saleh would have ended up fired at some point, I would have believed you, because I said to everyone, short the Jets. I think there's too much dysfunction there. But at this point, 2-3, a game out with the opportunity to go first, like that is what's surprising to me. So we'll see how it works out. Again, like to your point, these things usually do not go great in season, but the Jets clearly felt they needed to do something, and We'll see where it takes him from here, but a very interesting move. Already been reported by Michael Silver that Robert Saleh is not going to take any jobs in 2024, that he is going to take a vacation, and then he's going to get ready for job opportunities in 2025. So I would still think Matt would maybe call about a remote consultant role, if nothing else, just say like, hey, what can you do? But we'll see if there's anything to that, or if Saleh sticks to his guns and just takes the rest of the year off and prepares for 2025, which is my guess that probably is what he does. Paul, where can we find all of your fantastic work? Of course, on ESPN Lacrosse, and where can we find you on social media?
I appreciate it, Andy. Follow me on Twitter at Paul_Bredel, and like Andy said, ESPNLacrosse.com.
Yeah, it's really, really fantastic stuff. And if you're not making part of Paul's writing part of your daily routine, you definitely should be doing so. So make sure to check that out. And of course, follow Paul on Twitter at Paul_Bredel. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. You can follow the podcast at Packaday Podcast. For Paul and I, thank you so much for joining us. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.